guys, welcome to Maker Stories. As the name suggests, it is all about stories of makers, wherein in each episode, I will get into casual conversation with makers. And we talk about how they work, how they live, and what motivates them. In this episode, I have Anul as my guest. He is the co-founder of Makers Asylum in Mumbai. Listen to know more about his story, his view on maker culture, and how he manages family business, open source electronic business, Makers Asylum, and blogging all at the same time. So let's get started. Hi Anul, welcome to Maker Story.
Hey, hi Samarth, it's great to be here.
As a ritual of Maker Story podcast, all the guests share their story and then we move forward from there. So why don't you share your story with the Maker Stories audience?
But first of all, it's awesome that you're doing these podcasts. There aren't too many of them. So whatever few we get is good. I've heard some of your past podcasts and this is a great move. A little bit about myself. My name is Anul. I'm based out of Mumbai, born and brought up in Mumbai. I am not technically an engineer, but I'm pretty much a technical guy or a technical person in that sense. And I've been working in industry since about 1986, so that's been almost 30 years, I guess, now. But I used to read a lot earlier, but nowadays most of that reading is confined to online. But I still read as much as I can, voraciously. I also try to keep myself busy with lots and lots of hobbies, just so that I never have any spare free time that I can waste away. I didn't really do engineering per se. I do have a diploma in electronics, but that really doesn't count much. So whatever I know, whatever I've done is either by getting others to teach me or most often teaching myself all of these things. I spent a couple of days after college on my own in Bangalore. Worked for a couple of companies over there, a French company and a German company and so on. Got some experience. And then in 1990 is when I came back to Mumbai and joined my family business. That's where we build a test equipment for safety and compliance testing. And this is where we design test and measuring equipment. For example, home appliances is one category. If you want to test a home appliance for safety, you need equipment, and we make those equipment that's used by laboratories or by manufacturers. I also provide support for a company based in Boston, which does telepresence video robots. So these are essentially video conferencing devices which are mounted on a robot and hence are mobile. So handy for applications like hospitals and doctors or in the automobile industry and education. Somewhere along the line in 2009, I started hearing about Arduino website called Instructables, and I started looking at what people were doing. I kind of got inspired and I started dabbling with it. A person called Justin Shaw, he's based in Washington, D.C. And we did a couple of projects together, and that is how we started off Wylum. Wylum is distributed worldwide. We've got people based in Sydney and Germany and Boston and New York and Washington and Mumbai and so on. Based on how we have time available, we'll just design and build fun projects. Some of them have been successful enough that we have sold quite a lot of them through our manufacturing provider, which is Seed Studio. That's Wylum, which is essentially working with open hardware. So all of the projects we do are open hardware. You can find the hardware files, the software for all of it on github.com/Wylum. And some of the things we've done is basically clocks, various kinds of different clocks. We love to work with LEDs. In 2014, we designed an e-ink badge for the Open Hardware Conference at MIT. And then sometime in 2014, I met an interesting guy called Vego Chhabra at MakerFest in Ahmedabad. It was quite surprising to see so many of them at this event, which was really pretty nice. Accidentally bumped into Weber and we exchanged notes, and I found that he had started something called Makers Asylum in Bombay, and I came on board as co-founder, and then since then we have kind of grown quite a lot.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I think I've also seen your e-ink badges at MakerFest Ahmedabad.
Yes, we gave away those badges at the MakerFest. That was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's where actually I came to know about you. I browsed your profile and some of the great work that you have been doing so far. By the way, forgot to mention about the blogging that you are doing. Would you like to also talk about that?
Oh yeah, so a couple of years ago, I got approached by this website called Hackaday.com. Hackaday writes about people who are doing interesting stuff around the world. It could be a new project or a new hack or a different way of doing things. And it's been going strong for many, many years. But they've grown a lot in recent years, especially since they introduced, they got a new buyer because Hackaday was on the verge of being closed down. But luckily, Supplyframe stepped in and bought it up and, you know, supported us. So I think 2014, once again, I think they launched what's known as the Hackaday Prize with the intent of encouraging makers around the world to build substantial stuff that matters. So a couple of years back, I joined them and I write blog posts for them. I try to do a couple of them every week. It's not fixed, but I try to put in a few every week. And I try to look around for those that I can find from within India that are interesting. If not, well, there are lots and lots of people around the world who are basically hacking and breaking, and there's lots of stuff to write about for them.
All right. You mentioned about co-founding Makers Asylum meeting Vaibhav at MakerFest in Ahmedabad. So what's the journey look like?
Yeah.
So it's almost 2017 now. So what's the journey so far?
When I first met him in 2014 and he described to me what he was trying to do, he himself is a mechanical engineer. He studied in Boston University and then he was working with a company based in Boston but based in Mumbai. And they had a little office and he would have his mechanical tools over there. And, you know, he was trying to build the device for his parent company back in Boston. He's really interested in mechanical engineering and carpentry and so on. So he turned this little room at the back of his office in Bombay into a kind of a maker space. 50 square feet. I mean, if you had two people standing in there, it was a crowd. But he had a lot of his tools that he put there, and you know, every weekend people would meet up. When I joined in, I brought in all of the stuff that I had with me, all of my tools. I had a 3D printer at that time, and later on I also had a CNC machine. So I parked all of it at the place, and over time, the community grew. 50 square feet wasn't enough, so someone was kind enough to give us a garage that was slightly larger, about 350, 400 odd square feet, which was our first move. And at that point, Vaibhav actually gave up his day job and did full-time at the asylum. I couldn't do that. I have lots of other commitments. So, but I've been on as a mentor and guiding force. The community kept growing. So the biggest thing with Makerspaces is the community. That is the main resource at any Makerspace. And everything moves around that. And once the community grows, we needed a bigger space. So it was a space offered by college known as ISDI. So they gave us, I think, around some 800 odd square feet of space. And that was, again, a substantial move for us. We kept growing in terms of size and community and the kind of events and workshops we were doing. And I think about a year back, we made our fourth move. We are now at a fourth location, which is why we call it version 4. This is based in Andheri in Mumbai. And we now have more than 3,000 square feet of space, with more being added as we speak. And in terms of facilities, we've added a lot and a lot of stuff, but the biggest thing that has grown is, of course, the community. That has really skyrocketed, and that's the awesome thing about Makerspaces.
So I've also seen a couple of your crowdfunding campaign. I think recent one, that's how you got. So I think something you wanted to do on the rooftop, some biology lab.
Yeah, that's right. We needed to set up a welding lab, a tailoring lab, and a hydroponics roof garden kind of a thing. We couldn't make quite the amount of money that we were looking for. So these plans are at the moment on the standby. The trouble with makerspaces is it can't be run as a regular business where you can, you know, we don't have products that we can sell and make money and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's essentially a library.
Correct.
And we can stock it with the best books and we can have the best facilities and so on. But eventually, if nobody comes to the library, it's a kind of a waste. It can't survive without people. So that's the same thing with makerspaces. We need the community to rally around and, you know, come in and say, okay, we're going to support and be excited about what you are doing and so on. So it's going to take a while. It's sad, but it's not that we will not make it either way. We've grown. I mean, when we started 2014, Maker Salem was the first one in terms of being called a proper makerspace. But if you look up on the makerspace map of India, you will find so many of them. I mean, we have two makerspaces of our own. The second one is in Delhi, temporarily off for a while, but we are kickstarting it back again as we speak. Whoever is in Delhi right now, in fact. But you'll find makerspaces have sprouted up all over India now. I mean, in Kolkata, in Delhi, in Bangalore, Cochin, Pune, Surat, even in small towns like Meerut and so on, we've seen makerspaces come up, Hyderabad.
All right. So you mentioned about a community. So can you also talk more about what kind of actually work happens over there? And what kind of resources are available at Makers Assembly?
Okay, so I'll talk about what we have now, because when we started, we really didn't have a lot of anything. But what we do have now in terms of resources, number one, is we have a full-fledged woodworking lab. We have a full-fledged electronics lab, several 3D printers. We started with one. But we have lots of them now. We have one large laser cutter. We have one large CNC machine and a small experimental CNC as well. And all the other small tools and bits and bobs that you will usually require at a place like this, at a community place. So that's what we have in terms of resources. What we do, all kinds of things, right from small workshops that happen every week, basically things like tool training. So tool trainings are useful for members. As soon as a member joins, the first thing he's supposed to do is do a tool training. So he knows how to use the various tools. He knows about their safety and functioning and so on and so forth. So there's tool trainings for the woodworking workshop. There's tool training specifically for laser and 3D printer. These are the three main kinds of do. And then there are more focused ones on electronics and so on. But then we have also done a lot of other bigger things. For example, last year we did a pretty big program called the STEAM School. And STEAM worldwide, I mean Europe and in the US, STEAM signifies the five main branches that are critical to science, technology, engineering, art, and math. These are the five key skills that main areas where people work with when they think of makers and makerspaces. So we did a pretty intensive STEAM school in collaboration with the French government, and this was a one-month course over 4 weeks, and people were enrolled, and you know, we guided them through the whole process of brainstorming, thinking up of ideas, thinking up of different ways of solving a problem, and then how to apply those solutions and actually building a physical device that answers that. And along the way, they learned everything that needs to be learned about it. How to do CAD design, how to do laser cutting and 3D printing and electronics and all the various things that go with it. So it was almost a kind of a intensive course wrapped up over 1 month. And we would be actually repeating it again, hopefully. In the meanwhile, that was pretty much intensive. So we created a shorter version of it called rapid prototyping, which is only done on weekends, and we are right now conducting the third version of the rapid prototyping course as we speak.
You mentioned about the community. So can you also talk about what kind of actually people come to Makers Asylum? Is it a mostly engineering people or people from different background come over there?
Oh, well, sure. Most of them are engineers, but not all, actually. There is a large number of people who are not engineers at all. Many of them are artists or designers of various kinds. We've even had a doctor who came in and successfully completed a project for himself. He came in with a problem. He was an ophthalmic doctor. And he was trying to solve a particular problem about a cheap diagnostic device for checking eyes. But he knew what the problem was, and he knew how it could be solved, but he didn't know how to actually do it. So he came in, and we assigned a couple of interns to him, and they helped him. You know, they went through several phases of prototyping different kinds of designs, and they used 3D printers and laser cutters, and eventually he came out with a successful product. So he was someone who didn't know anything about engineering or using lasers and 3D printers, and successfully managed to a product for a problem that he himself was facing. Mm-hmm. So we've had these kind of people. In the woodworking lab, we have a gentleman called Viren Vaz. He is a software engineer by day, but his passion is with woodworking. And his woodworking workshops are extremely popular. Every time we announce it, they just go full. And he keeps conducting them, I think, at extreme regular intervals, maybe once a month or more sometimes. So all kinds of people. We've kickstarted companies at the asylum, several of them, so that helps as well. Started off small as a hobby and then converted it into a actual physical business that supports them.
So talking of Makers Asylum team, So there is you over there, and there is this person who is taking care of woodworking. So how many those people are?
So, yeah, that's probably a complaint they might have with me, because I don't go there very often, mainly because I'm just doing too many other things. But every time they need me or want me, I definitely put everything aside and go there and help them out. But Vaibhav is at the helm of affairs. There's a bunch of people who run the space day to day. We have a space manager, Girish. He's an architect and who really is there all the time, handles a lot of the day to day things at the asylum, like teaching people how to use the 3D printer and so on. Jaisal is there a lot of the time. He takes charge of teaching people or taking care of the laser cutter. Then we have Thomas Fernando, who is in charge of the electronics lab, and he that part and section. Viren is the woodworking champion, so he takes care of all of that and so on. So we have these various people. A lot of them do it just out of their passion and as our full-time employees, Girish, for example, and so on. But the team is fluid; it keeps changing a lot. Quite often, we, take in young engineers who are just out of college and look. They have maybe a gap year or a few months available, and they're looking for some place where they can pick up skills. And we don't mind taking on such people just so that it helps them as well as helps us to run the place at the same time.
I know you already mentioned about maker culture in India that is growing over the years. You mentioned initially there was maker space only in a few metro cities, Mumbai, Delhi, and few other places, and now there are lots of maker spaces all over India. So in general, what are your views on maker culture?
Well, it's nothing new, except that the word is new, right? I mean, people have been makers forever. I mean, anyone who does anything using any of the STEAM, tech, engineering, art, or math, is a maker. So, for example, 50, 60, 70 years back, an amateur radio operator, well, he's a maker because he builds his own transmitter and, builds his own antennas and so on. People who play with art and craft, for example, those who do origami, they are makers in their own rights and so on. The culture per se has actually come up only because it gains a sort of a popularity in the US starting sometime in the year of this century, sometime in year 2000 and on, when makerspaces started popping up in the US and in Europe and Germany and so on. Germany actually has a much earlier instance of makerspaces and so on, but the popularity came with what happened in the US with setting up of spaces. Impetus might have been is the advent of rapid prototyping technologies, especially 3D printing and laser cutting. And likely because many of the patents that shrouded this whole thing in secrecy expired around the same time, and it hence became possible to do open source work on developing machines and stuff like that. The word is new, maker or so on, but I mean, it's not, the concept isn't, I think it's been a pretty old one. Even, I mean, in India, when you talk of Jugaad, you're talking of nothing else but, you know, a maker person or a hack. A hack is nothing but a Jugaad, and we've been doing it for hundreds of years, maybe more actually. The new concept might take a while to take root in India. One of the biggest challenges we have, for example, at Maker's Asylum, is when people come in and they really don't know what the whole space is about or what they can do about it. Quite often they think this is a place where we will teach them things now, but that's not the attitude you're supposed to come with. You're supposed to come with the attitude of, why, I want to teach myself something and I would like to come here and learn to do X, Y, Z. And if you get stuck, there are people who can help you with, but essentially it's self-help. You try to teach yourself how things work or how tools work and so on and so forth. Attitude will take a while to take root over here. It's in Europe and US now, but I think in India it's going to take a few more years.
All right. So now we move on to your personal part. So you mentioned you are doing so many things. Starting from Bioloom to doing your family business to blogging to even mentoring at Maker's Asylum. So how do you manage your day and what's your typical day looks like?
Our day is pretty packed. I'm an avid cyclist, so I try and bike to work as often as I can, at least a couple of times in a week at the bare minimum. And my day job takes up from 9 to 6 or 7 in the evening. So that's a major part of my day spent at my day job. I leave home at around 8:30 on my bike and reach there, and it's around 6 or 7. And once I get home, that's when I do a lot of the other work. I probably write a Hackaday article or work on some circuits or whatever for Havailum, do some Asylum stuff. I help a lot with designing products that we can use at the asylum. So projects, you know, if we need a learn to solder kind of a project, then I help them build the circuit and manufacture it and so on. The rest of the day goes pretty much in that. By the time I hit bed, it's usually around 12 at night. So yeah, that's a typical day. Weekends are more of the same, except I work on Saturdays as well at my day job. Sunday I usually spend doing more of the same stuff, writing for Hackaday, doing stuff for Wylum and Maker's Asylum and so on. There's never a spare day or a spare minute.
That's great actually. So what about your family? When do you get time for your family?
Well, that's a big complaint. My wife is always complaining, but she's also been extremely supportive. I wouldn't be able to do half of what I've done if it wasn't for support. I mean, if they don't agree with what you're doing, it's not going to, I mean, you really can't do these kind of things. So that's the way it is. She is also pretty interested and keen in a lot of the things I do, which helps. Like when I go to the asylum, she loves to come along. She tries her hand. She's not an engineer, but she still loves doing stuff, ordering and stuff like that. She always loves it when I make some wearable electronics for her. That helps a lot. Maybe I build her a light-up earring or a light-up necklace, and that that really keeps her very, very excited and happy. My son is a computer engineer, but at this point, he's really not too interested in the makeup part of it. Maybe at a different point in his life, he might get interested. He's more keen or focused on building his career at the moment. So I don't try and force myself too much on what direction he needs to move in. It takes his own decisions. So, yeah, family is great. I mean, I love that they support me in whatever I do. That really helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So without family support, you cannot do anything, actually.
Definitely, yeah.
So a question around some of the apps and tools that you cannot live without.
That would be a long list, but on the hardware side, definitely, you know, all the electronic tools. Like, for example, at my day job, I have some really, really awesome. One of the things I need to do is a process known as calibration. That's pretty, needs really high-tech equipment to do that. Really good tools at my day job. But other than that, the asylum, for example, or at home, I have a basic set of electronic tools. Some, of course, I have access to all the woodworking tools that I can use, 3D printers, laser, CNC. So the thing is, at this point, because I have access to all of these, it's become something that I take for granted. Like, if I want to do, I don't even have to worry about how can I get this done. All of these facilities are so easily available to me that on the software side, I am a huge fan of open and free source software. All of my computers, I use Linux operating systems. My main tools are obviously all kinds of CAD. So electrical CAD, I use a tool known as SkyCAD. For mechanical, I use something known as FreeCAD and sometimes OpenSCAD. I do all of my documentation in LibreOffice. For drawings, I use Inkscape. And then there's some special tools for doing, you know, VNC and SSH or Telnet and stuff like that. So, but I believe a lot in open source, and I try and see as often as possible if I can convince people to convert from closed source to open source. Mm-hmm. Right about that.
So I know you are doing so many things in a day or in a week. So what keeps you going? What motivates you? And what makes it worth it for you?
I don't know. It's just something within me. I'm very inquisitive. See if I can find answers for those. I love to read a lot. And thing bog me down a lot. For example, during my years, I've had lots and lots of hobbies, but never one that kind of completely overtook me, you know. So, but a lot. For example, there was a stage in life when I began me. And it really taught me a lot of skills in terms of geometry and concentration and accuracy and stuff like that. But there was a certain period in life when I did it, and then I didn't have time for it, so I don't fret over it too much. Maybe I'll take it up again when I'm much older and I have more time, for example. There was a time when I used to do a lot of air modeling, but not anymore, again, because, well, time is an issue, and anyway, it's getting illegal ramifications with all these drones and stuff like that. So, yeah, at one point I used to be an amateur radio operator. I even held a license for a couple of years, but it came in the way and I gave that up. So I might come back to that again. I might again give my exam once again and start doing ham radio again. Yeah, all of these things keep motivating me. When I'm cycling, I'm thinking of ideas and stuff, and also all of the confusion and traffic in Mumbai kind of recedes in the background when I'm doing that. Just motivation. I keep thinking of stuff to do, and I'm ready to go to work. I mean, it's like I'm never bored or, you know, worried about, oh hell, what am I going to do today? It's looking forward to every day.
That's quite inspiring. So a couple of final questions. So what is next for you, both personally and professionally?
Personally, professionally, there's actually very little difference between the two. It's all one and the same for me. And next for me is more of the same, really. Every day, do more awesome stuff. Be the best I can every day. I'm happy to look forward to every day. That's it. future, I mean, if that was the question, then yeah, in the next couple of days, we're launching another product. And right now, we're giving finishing touches to it. It's going to be a crowdfunding campaign for an LED matrix system, which lets you build huge panels without doing any soldering at all. So you just screw in a panel and it works. In fact, today I've been working on the last finishing touches for it since morning. Even the next couple of days for that. So that's what's next.
All right. So any advice for fellow Indian makers?
Indian makers, yeah, I think first thing would be documentation. One of the biggest things where I see them losing out on their counterparts in other countries is that they don't document the stuff they do. So quite often they get excited with just the end result. Okay, this is what I made. It's very difficult, you know, to ask them questions about how they did this or what did they do to, did they have any problems, how did they solve those problems. And they don't write it down or they don't blog about it. A lot of them who are doing really, really great work, it becomes impossible to, you know, be heard or seen worldwide because nobody knows you. I mean, if you just put a picture on Facebook about what you have done, it'll help a lot. And I'm really hoping that this is one thing that they would start doing more of. And the more that they do that, the more people like Hackaday can write about it, and the more people around the world can see what, you know, is happening over here and so on. Anyone who's listening and is not doing this would take this advice and start doing that.
One last question. So who is someone you would like to see next in Maker Stories?
Oh, I know a lot of them, so it could be a long list. I'm not sure how, you know, they would fit in with this whole thing. But one interesting person, and this may sound biased, but one interesting person who can really do justice to this format would definitely be sometime talk to Vaibhav Chhabra, because he's got a different perspective on this whole thing. He's come at a different, you know, viewpoint on this whole thing. And you might find it totally different from my talk, Maker Asylum, against what he talks about Maker Asylum. So it would be extremely interesting for your listeners to hear from him as well. This, but other than that, there's several other names of makers who are doing. Some of them, for example, have given up. For example, Mahesh Venkatachalam, he engineer. Working in California, who gave up his job, came here and started a business. Products are open source. He's trying to, you know, bootstrap that as a business. So that's a pretty commendable thing to do, especially with this open source and open hardware angle. There's also Sandeep Patil from Explore Embedded. He's doing great work on it. Again, he's someone who builds a lot of projects, but all of them are open source hardware, which means that he's willing to share whatever he's doing with everyone else without any hesitation at all. So these are a few guys. There's another nice hacker in Pune, Rohit Gupta, does lots and lots of different hacks, and I keep reading about them. I've written a couple of them for Hackaday as well.
All right. So one final thing before we close, actually, is there anything that you would like to share with everyone?
As a parting remark, what I would love to see or have happen for more and more people to actually start using these various makerspaces that are cropping up all over the country and use them to bring their ideas to actual reality and solve problems. So as of now, not just the asylum, but almost every other makerspace is surviving on things like doing training programs and workshops and so on and so forth, because they need the money to, you know, and keep them running and pay salaries and stuff like that. But the real hacks aren't coming out of these makerspaces yet. So I'm really hoping that people would to a library, and it's difficult in the internet age, but this library is very different, you know. It's really more hands-on tools and that. But if people would just, you know, instead of and it's exactly the same as maybe taking a gym membership, makerspace, go there, meet the people, get inspired by them, maybe you can build some new stuff, document it, show it to the world. So one of the ways, you know, for example, Hackaday into 2014, they set up what's known as the Hackaday Prize. It's an annual event that carries hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of prize money. So it's on right now. It started sometime in March of this year, and it will conclude sometime in October. So during this period, people have the time to build something. There are various topics that they can address, and they can build solutions to problems and stuff like that. And for that, I think best way is to visit the website. It's hackaday.io/prize, which will give you all the information that you need. So maybe if we have more people from India taking part in this, that would help a lot as well. Not just for the person personally, if he ends up winning a prize, but also for us as a community in India to be noticed in the rest of the world as a place where good hacking happens in terms of, you know, bringing some solutions to challenging problems that we face.
All right. We have come to an end of the podcast. So thanks, Anul, for your time and sharing your story. And I hope you keep on doing amazing stuff. Looking forward to reading more on hackaday.io.
Pleasure being here. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thanks everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, request you to share it within your social network. You can share your review and comments to us via email makerstories@outlook.com. I will be back with more maker stories in next episode. Until then, happy making.